Welcome to the Dave and Danger Show, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is a show about independent and old school pro wrestling, featuring current events, interviews, and whatever else they decide to talk about. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents the Dave and Danger Show with your hosts, Dave Wills and Mark Danger.
That is GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. I said the website a bunch of times, so I've been good.
Five-time World Heavyweight Champion.
That wasn't the idea, but you get the point. Anyways, I said the website's name a lot, so that would make a lot of people happy, especially our sponsors. Georgia Wrestling, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. And you're tuned into the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, where we talk about a little wrestling, a little history, and I try to keep Danger from jumping through the microphone and coming through your iPod.
What are you trying to do? Like every time you say Georgia Wrestling History, Rich Take you to get Nick or something?
No. Of course not. We never would do that. We never would shield the site. Of course we'd shield the site. Never. You stop it. Anyway. Hi-ho, it's Tuesday night, 8:01 p.m. It may not be. You may be listening to it at whatever time, 8:57 a.m. It doesn't matter.
It is 2:32 a.m.
You're listening to us, and you can't stop unless you turn us off. Anyways, I'm Dave Wills. I'll introduce my co-host momentarily. But this is what we do every Tuesday, and we appreciate you who tune in. Those who don't tune in, we don't care about you because, well, you're not tuning in, so we could care less.
It's like TNA.
Anyways, I have a very lively co-host tonight. His foot is sore.
I'm not taking paint job.
He's taking some very sharp, he's taking like a leave or something. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the co-host with the Mo-host. He is the living icon, Mark Danger.
What is up? What is up? Hi-ho, off way we go. I am the living icon, Mark Danger. The reason I am the living icon is, well, because I can be. Point and said.
The reason why is because he said he was, and no one's disagreed yet. So, and if you do disagree, we don't care. He's the icon. He'd be calling that when I go to, like, eat Mexican. So, you know, Mariachi Band. I call the Mariachi Band's loud, isn't it?
Well,
you know?
It was funny when they were playing Michael Jackson beat it in a Russian polka. That was kind
of
funny.
For those of you who don't live with me like the icon does, while he's in his never-ending search for work, email him. Email me if you have a job. Please help. But, listeners, but we went to a local Mexican restaurant, which was very good and had marvelous chips and sauce at the La Parrilla. Not that they give us anything either, but they should.
A little watery. I like that.
I think the location was fantastic. But we heard a Mexican mariachi band play Beat It. So that was kind of interesting. Of course, Michael Jackson won't play Beat It anymore for obvious reasons.
No.
Anyway, I'm not going to... No. I'm not going to say anything bad about Michael Jackson because we had a guy who I actually talked to him somewhat. Well... wasn't a regular basis, but it was the irregular basis. Larry Sweeney passed away yesterday. A lot of people may know him as Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney. His real name Alex Whybrow, and he was a really good guy. For what I met him, I saw him at quite a few shows in the IWA Deep South. I'd go over there and tolerate all that crap they put with thumbtacks and nonsense and syringes and hopefully see something really good with... Sal Rodaro or Larry Sweeney or something, to see some decent wrestling too, Quack and Bush. So I tolerate that nonsense to watch some really good wrestling. And Sweeney was a good guy. He always was nice. And he actually offered, he was wrestling Brian Alvarez at a show coming up. And unfortunately, it was too soon to notice, but if I had the notice, I could have went up to Port Lynch and been his Texarkana manager, which would have been really cool and possibly interfered to cost Alvarez a match. But anyways, didn't happen. But he was a good guy, and I thought a lot of Larry Sweeney, and I I hate that everything happened, and I really hate that he chose to go out his way. I really hate that. If you, this is my personal to anyone, if you are having issues and problems and think you can't get better, before you take your own life, reach out and call a friend. There are people who will try to help you, people who care about you. I think sometimes you don't realize that. But just remember that. Anyways, that's what I want to do. Okay, somber note. Sorry about that, but I did want to definitely pay a little acknowledgement to Larry Sweeney. He entertained me greatly. And I hate that he isn't the premier manager in WWE today, unfortunately. He had some issues with, drugs, it's known, and also he had a rough time with being bipolar and was in a car accident. And then they did have, and some people have made the comment that there were some similarities in his story in Candida, and not Candida's, Canyons. So, anyways. Remember the family? Anyways, that's my housekeeping note. On a happy note, let's talk about Friends for a Friend Icon. Our guest is going to be from Friends from a Friend. He was at the show. Icon, tell us about Friends from a Friend and actually, you know, like do wrestling things and everything.
Friends for a Friend was basically, it was Susan Mania. We were able to raise a bunch of dollars for her, which is going to go towards her cancer treatment.
Susan who?
Susan Meeks. She's a very loving wrestling fan. We've known her, I would say, probably, about 91, 92?
I didn't know you until 92, so the 93.
It was the early 90s. We had hanging out, going to wrestling shows. And at first, we kind of scared of her, but at the second show...
You were not scared of her. You may have been scared of her.
Well, let me talk now. The first time we saw her, we were kind of scared to talk, but afterwards we became real good friends. And every time we would go to the shows, especially if North Georgia at the Auction Barn, we would always look forward and talk to her. And very, very sweet lady. I can't think enough all the wrestlers that came out: Steve Corino, Roxy Cotton, Glacier. Some guy who I felt very intimidated when he walked in, Ron Studd, who is, better to say, he is one tall person.
He's a very, very tall man.
And if I saw him in an alley, I would just give myself the last rites, because it's going to be over. But Ron is a nice guy. But Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker was there, Mike Sanders. Butcher Bobby Hayes, Eddie Norris was there. The exotic ones is Nigel Sherrod, my new girlfriend, maybe, Cinder, who I like. Joyce Grable.
Grable's not your new girlfriend, which is pretty great.
Hey, I brought her flowers.
That's all we need, the fact that somebody's got a girlfriend at the show, Icon. That's all the hell we need. You do not have a girlfriend. Take that back right now, Joyce.
Joyce Grable, she's the sweetest person, and I can only dream.
Okay, that's very good.
We had, I'm sorry to say Baby Lee Leather, but we had Baby, we had Pig Lee Leather, we had, we had Phil Hefner,
Southside Trash, Mr.
Southside Trash,
Waterhouse.
It was big, and Jen Holbrook was there, Ben Masters, Raven, a lot of surprises.
Eric Watts
showed up. And most of all, the greatest thing is we had local indie guys who didn't, sneak in the back or anything or try to sneak their way in. They actually bought tickets to help out Susan, which was one of the greatest things. And that shows you what Georgia Indy is all about.
Okay, I had some great matches, too. If you didn't see it, you missed a great show. They're going to be having a DVD of it coming out. I was proud to be a part of it. We were proud to have Ben Masters and Joyce Grable on last week. We definitely will have a longer session with Joyce Grable and Ben Masters down the line, probably get them each on individually. There's still a lot of the story to tell. Ben Masters has been promoting forever, and I definitely want to go into that. The show last week was more driven to be for the Susan show. And again, if you didn't like last week's show, well, guess what? It's my show, Miss Danger's show. We'll do what we want. You don't like it, go start your own damn show.
From the words of DX, if you don't like it.
No, we're not going to. We don't need to give anybody any ideas or anything. Anyways.
Talking about coming shows, do you know what Saturday is?
Okay, what is Saturday?
Saturday is MCCW at Forest Park High School. You can come out and see great MCCW action. Already signed, we have the Commie Russians with Comrade Phil Hefner taking on the Southern Outlaws. And if you can't get your fix on that, Sunday you can be part of the TV action, which I strongly, if you're a huge fan like Memphis or the old championship wrestling in the studio wrestling type setting, you need to check that one out. It's a free show. April 17th at 3 p.m., People TV Studios. You get all the information at mgcwnow.com. I'm going to be there. Dave may be there.
I'm planning on being there.
I know. I'm just kidding.
If you're going to be there, how are you getting there if I don't know?
I'm going to go fly with me.
You're using my car.
I said fly, not drive.
Okay, you go fly.
But it's just going to be great MGCW action. I strongly, like I said, encourage you to come out and support the local indie wrestling.
Very nice, very nice. Before we get Mr. Luke Gallus on the line, I was going to say one thing. We invite your questions and we invite your comments. But Danger and I have been having a little bit of a disagreement on this. The new John Cena banner. Okay, when he comes out, now I know you're not going to be able to look it up right now. The Raw's not on, unless you get on your DVR. It's been said that there's a ribbon in the background. I've checked out, there is a ribbon that has stars in it, and Danger says it looks somewhat like a Confederate flag.
It's got the same colors. I mean, it's the said black, or the same red background. It's got the blue lines in the formations, and you got white stars. Just looking at it, it's just, you're going to notice it. And when I first saw it, that was the first thing that popped up. It looked like a Confederate flag.
Okay. To me, it looks like, and Danger said that at Mania, where they had two of them going, it looked like a larger Confederate flag as they're going down the ramp. But what I've seen, it looks pretty much like the ribbon, a ribbon of stars like the AWA or something would use. Now, feel free to email us or send us a text or a Facebook or an email or something or call in later and let us know what you think. I don't see it. Danger tells me it's definitely there, so that's one thing. And the other thing is, Danger has also mentioned that he also feels that it's a bad idea to put the Rock versus Cena main event out this early. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think, well, what's the big deal? Okay. So what? Maybe they'll sell some tickets. Danger said, what if they get injured? I don't think they're going to get injured.
Well, you don't know that. I mean, anything can happen in entertainment.
I did not know. In our real life, I did not know Japan would have 5 zillion tsunamis and be washed away. I did not know you'd wind up as a house guest for a while.
And another thing is, because it is cars subject to change, it could be a great practical joke. It could be a great April Fool's joke. Because it is on April the 1st.
Again, this will also never happen because there's no way they're going to go out there and say April Fool's not having a match. Because the arena in May would say, we're not giving you the money, we got to give refunds first. Then the pay-per-view people would say, we're not giving you money, we got to give refunds first. And they wouldn't be able to be on pay-per-view unless they had an appearance bond or something in the future. I don't see them doing that. Why would they do that?
Well, it's the same thing that people paid money, the $55, to see Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus on pay-per-view, and they didn't get it. It's just
if you can see his point of view, I want to hear from you because I can't. I can't understand it. We're agreeing to disagree, but...
Dave, I mean, it's so out there, even Stevie Wonder could see it. I mean,
it's not out there. Stevie Wonder can't see it. It's disturbing at best. Oh, let's see here.
Last night, heartfelt retirement, same condition that Steve Austin had. And what did you think of his heartfelt retirement?
I wish him well. I hope he stays well, and I hope he has a great life and doesn't wind up injured any more than what he already is. I hope he hangs in there and does well.
Yeah, it's a smart choice. Basically told Steve Austin the same thing. It's either continue to either cripple yourself that you're going to be a paralytic or be in a wheelchair or deaf, or you can leave, retire early, and have a normal life. And Edge chose to do that. Some people don't necessarily like that decision.
According to what I understand, it may not be exactly Edge's choice.
But yeah,
Dr. Mahmood said there's no way they can allow him to compete.
Right.
He was that bad shape. So, it may have been somebody else's decision.
It's somebody else's decision, but I remember reading an interview he did in 2003 stating that if he did get another major injury, that he would hang it up. With pro wrestling, there are severe injuries because it's a real sport. People think it's fake, but broken bodies. We've been to FanFest. We've been to shows and where they've had legends, and you've seen them walking around canes, hardly walk, and it's just it's a real sport, and it does take a toll on your body.
All right, let's go ahead and do one more real quick. I'll probably talk to this with Mr. Gallows as well. Thoughts on Tough Enough, Ike?
Tough Enough, I actually kind of like it better. Something we will talk about, Mr. Gallows, that apparently nothing against our guest, but apparently he wasn't tough enough to make it in the 2005 edition of it. So we'll ask him about it and his thoughts on developmental training.
Okay. Well, they didn't take wrestlers back then, Dange, too. That's another thing. So, anyways, we'll do that. Promo the shows, Danger. I'll let you do that, and then we'll get into our guest.
In my sexy radio voice, tomorrow, I won't do that to you. Good, I'll put you to sleep. But tomorrow, Wednesday night at 8 o'clock on GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, you have Ringside Rap by that cute little guy, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi, and they're going to talk about Dragon Gate. They're going to talk about UFC, TNA, WWE, Edge, the unfortunate passing of Larry Sweeney, and they're going to have a guest. They're going to have Johnny Graziano of Evolve. So it's going to be a great show, Dave.
For anyone who listened and thought you heard it wrong, that was the passing of Larry Sweeney. Johnny Swinger has not passed away. Danger, apologize to all fans for saying anything about Johnny Swinger.
I have no idea where his name came from. It just, like, came out. But I apologize. He is still alive. He's probably in Alabama.
We don't know where he's at. Hey, let's give him maybe we need to have him on the David Danger show. We're trying to get Johnny Swinger on the David Danger show for sure, says Danger. Who was the other person you claimed was I think Danger claimed, didn't you claim Bruno had passed at one time? I forget. You claimed somebody else had passed at one time. Anyways, we passed.
Maybe it was Justin Bieber, but that my whole
film. We passed time to go, so we're going to go in there. We're going to let you stand up and chicken dance for a few minutes. While we try to get Mr. Gallus on the phone, so here we go. Let's go ahead and shake the chicken. Okay. Whoa, that's enough of that. Anyway. Oh, boy, that's what happens with, well, anyways, that's fine, everything. Hey, we got a great guest tonight. We're really looking forward to him. This is a fantastic wrestler. You know, I always really enjoyed it when you could go ahead and watch a guy move up from when he started wrestling all the way up to whenever he becomes a star. We had to do that with guys like Sting and UWF Danger, where we saw Sting start out as a member of the Blade Runners of Hot Stuff, Eddie Gilbert, move up to, you know, teaming up with Eddie Gilbert, move up to NWA facing Flair, and then he became a superstar, you know. This guy we've been able to watch is, you know, in Georgia as a freaking deacon, so he move up to WWE. One time as Kane number two, the fake Kane, as they've called it, we saw him become one half the tag team. They should have named him Biscuits and Gravy with Jesse and Jesse and Festus. And his latest incarnation in the Straight Edge Society with CM Punk. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our pleasure to have a former WWE superstar and a man who we're really looking forward to interviewing and had a great time meeting at the Friends for a Friend show, Mr. Luke Gallows.
How's it going, guys? Good to be here.
Welcome to the David Danger Show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, man.
It's really great to have you on. You've been out of the WWF for how long now has it been?
Since November. So what is that, about 6 months?
6 months. Just wondering, what all have you been doing with yourself and everything? How's everything been going? I know you've been seeing your name on some results and stuff. What have you been doing? Where have you been at as of late?
Everything's been good, man. I've been staying really busy. I got to fulfill a lifelong, kind of a wrestling bucket list dream of going and working in Japan. And I've been there for two different companies. I have a kind of a semi-exclusive thing with the Inokis at IGF, but I'm able to go other places. And I got, you know, two more companies coming up that I'm going for. And we just... was lucky enough to fall into this thing in Africa and Nigeria, and I think that's going to open up and be really good booking talent over there. I leave again for there on Saturday, and I'm actually going straight from there back to Japan. So I've been down to Puerto Rico for the colognes a few times. I've been going everywhere. I love the overseas stuff, and then when I'm at home, I work the indie scene. That's where I came from, ever since I was an 18-year-old kid, so... nice to go back, and it's got, you know, kind of a grassroots feel to it, and I'm still a young guy, seeing the young guys coming up and stuff like that, so still love the business. I love getting out there and working and, you know, going as many places as possible. We've got an Australian tour coming up in November and stuff like that, so everything's rolling.
Very nice, very nice. A lot of people talk about Japan. We had Kyle Matthews on a few weeks ago, and he was talking about how, you know, I think he was touring with the Dragon Gate, I believe, and it's talked about how much he had learned over there. What's it like wrestling in Japan, and, what have you picked up some stuff, and how's it different than wrestling in the USA? Because this is a little bit different company than what he was talking about.
The style is a lot different. And any fan who's listened to this program has seen Japanese wrestling, and you can tell that it's a harder-hitting, more aggressive, I don't want to say more an athletic style, because I think some of the best athletes going are the WWE and TNA guys, but it's just different. And then, you hear the stories, and, you know, I'm sure I read the same books growing up that you guys did. The first time you go to Japan, especially for me after, you know, I was 21 when I went to the big company, that was one place I never went with the WWE, so I had never experienced it before. And, my first night out over there, we're in front of 10,000 people, and, well, I thought we were working our asses off, but the crowd's so much different. You know, it's not like a bunch of, you know, my crowd that I like to be around, a bunch of, you know, beer-drinking, loud-ass rednecks. These Japanese people are sitting there in business suits, and they're politely clapping when they see something that they like. And it's just really different. I think it's a great experience, and it teaches you to work harder and possibly even work smarter. So, yeah.
Fantastic. That's great about you. Able to stay busy in Japan. You're talking about, I think you said, a tour of Nigeria and Australia. That's phenomenal, man. I'm glad to see you doing real well.
Yeah. You know, I'm all about, you know, staying busy and staying out there and staying effective, I guess. So I've been this will be my second trip to Africa coming up, and then this is a week-long tour, and then I got 2 weeks coming up in June, and we got stuff booked all throughout the year over there. And, you know, I'm making that kind of my main focal point. Japan and the Africa thing have been really good, so I'm just trying to keep it keep it rolling, man.
Absolutely. I was going to ask, it had to be somewhat disappointing whenever WWE did release you, because I'm not speaking for anybody but myself, maybe Danger too. I thought you and CM Punk should have been tag champs. Okay, I'm speaking for Danger. He agrees, definitely.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, it's always a disappointment anytime you get fired, but for me it was like the writing was on the wall, because we had just come off the Straight Edge thing and we were on the road all the time. We were in a high-profile deal on TV, and now I'm doing, like, superstars and dark matches. And as a performer, you know, I mean, at the time, I turned 27 years old a month after I was let go. So I'm just now 27. I was 26, and I was like, this sucks. You know what I mean? I'm still in, you know, these are my prime formative years as a performer, and I don't want to be sitting here not doing shit. So I was pitching ideas and stuff like that. And then, you know, getting let go was almost a little bit of a blessing in disguise, because I've been able to create my own business out of myself and you know, learning the other side and going out and, you know, seeking people who want to use my services and things like that, and trying to continue to evolve as a performer and things like that, because you definitely haven't seen the last of me on a national platform, I don't think, you know, whatsoever.
Well, for some reason, it just seems that a lot of times you'll see a guy like yourself who's got, like, really good height, really good build and all, that they'll go ahead and give a few chances to. And remember when I didn't get the face turn with you at all, I thought there still was much left. Perhaps, you know, it was the unfortunate thing with Serena wind up pretty much being let go at the time. Maybe that's something that soured him on the act or something. But I thought they still had plenty more left. And, you know, it's different after you've been, you know, so aligned with CM Punk to come out there and become a strong face when, you know, you're, like you said, for lack of a better term, you're, you know, appearing on Superstars and that's it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was all like, it all went downhill at SummerSlam. I thought we had great momentum. We were teasing different things in the group. There were different ideas being tossed around. And then, you know, within a five-day span, whatever it was, Joey Mercury tears his pec off of his shoulder and has to have, you know, surgery to reconstruct that, and Serena's fired. So, you know, our act that had been building steam for, you know, however long was kind of, you know, that was kind of the shit at that point. That's when I was wondering, like, where is this thing going to go, you know? And I thought that there was a lot left that we could have done with it, but I was the one in the role. So, of course, I'm wanting to, you know, be out there and be on TV and make money. So I'm going to think that, you know.
Well, but like you said, you know, it could be, you know, a little bit of a blessing in disguise, because you got to go out there and you got to sell, you know, you got to be able to deal and sell your services and stuff like that. Plus, also, it helps that way other people are getting exposed and getting, you know, you know, burn out, or, you know, when they're getting their show on TV, you're still out there working and learning and doing other things. It may make it where you come back, they have to give you even a stronger push the next go around, which could be good. I personally hate what they're doing. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm finish your thought.
I was going to say, personally, I mean, you know, while you hate that, you definitely wouldn't want to be, I don't know if you'd want to be up there, you know, like the spot that you got Ted DiBiase in, where he just keeps on losing, because, you know, where do they go in from there? You know, it's like he's just waiting, you know, time. And I thought he had a hell of a lot of talent. I'm surprised that they haven't. You know, that's another one. I just don't get WWE sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and that's something you can scratch your head all day, because I think Teddy's got a boatload of talent as well, and I thought that they were on the right track with him for a while. But, you know, there are things, and there are marketing plans, and there are things way beyond just what we as, you know, and I consider myself in the same boat as fans or marks or whatever you want to call it, see. So, I mean, you never know what the driving force behind this guy over that guy or how it really works, you know, and what demographic they're trying to play to and stuff like that. And it's just, that's the business sense of the wrestling business that sometimes sucks for the wrestlers and fans, I think. But, you know, it is what it is. And like you said, that's the ultimate goal for me, is to go back and become a bigger star than I ever was before, and to have, you know, portray a character on television that's a little more truer to my my real personality, you know, something like that. Or, you know, I thought coming out of Festus Festus would have been the perfect monster heel. He could have built up Festus. And then once you build him up and have him run through so many guys at such a certain level, then he's perfect defeat to an Undertaker or Kane or something like that, because I was big enough to be in there with those guys and athletic enough to make their, you know, their stuff look good and everything like that. That's what I always hoped for. But, you know, who knows?
Sure, sure. Real quick, I was gonna ask you. I was gonna ask you about how do you feel? I lost my train of thought. I lost my train of thought for a second. But you know, like you said, if you do come back down the line, you know, Hunter's probably gonna be going to part time. Taker's, you know, he's not gonna be working every show. You know, they've already opened up a little spot at the top, and, you know, R-Truth's going to get a third of a main event this go-round. Maybe right. Down the line they can book it, you know. I mean, Edge is retired. I mean, there's already some spots that open up. Somebody's got to fill. And, you know, do they want to go down to Florida Championship Wrestling and get somebody who's, you know, greener than trees, or do they want to, you know, get somebody who comes back and, you know, pretty good? You might be sitting pretty in another 6 to 8 months, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping for, you know. And but the other thing is, you know, I've, you know, off the record talked to the two big companies, but, I mean, thank God, you know, for the promotion of WWE and that monster and the, you know, moving along and learning my craft and stuff like that in my last couple of years there, that I'm busy enough right now where I don't need it, you know. So that's a nice feeling to have for the first time, you know. I don't need them right now. Now, eventually you have to go back on TV because exposure is the name of the game, and it's the entertainment business. But it's nice not to need them and have to call them every day or anything like that, because I haven't, you know. I've just been doing my thing and, you know, working as much as possible.
You do realize when you don't need them is when you're most appealing to them as well, it seems like. Whenever everybody was saying, well, I'm not interested in for WWE. They kept trying to grab, you know, Superstar Graham or whoever else. And, come back over here. Dan DiBiase Sr. for months, for years. Right. Nah, I'm not doing WWE. And then he's already there as a producer, and his sons are in there. And you never do know and everything. Dave, you have some questions?
You never know.
Yeah, one of the questions we have, we got the new Tough Enough coming out, and I know back in 2005, I guess you weren't selected as to be part of the Tough Enough cast. Your thoughts of doing the training but eventually they gave you that developmental deal, so.
Yeah, I went to L.A. when I was 20 years old and tried out for that thing. And I remember the tryout. Like, the first day I did great, and the second day, for whatever reason, I just sucked a dick. So I don't know if it was nerves or whatever, but they ended up, they liked me, and, you know, I was big and young and stuff like that. So that helped, and then I pestered them. I sent Johnny Ace and Tommy Dreamer, you know, tape after tape after tape, and called them every single week. And that's, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and that's how that worked out. But the Tough Enough question, it'll be interesting. I'm glad to see Bill DeMont, who's a a controversial figure as far as pro wrestling training goes, coming out of all the stuff that happened with Deep South. But I think that I, for one, and I'm speaking only on my own behalf because I'm sure you've talked to people who feel otherwise, but, you know, I did the independents for 3 years, and I was still green as goose shit when I got to developmental, but, you know, I was 21. And Bill trained us Japanese style, and it was hard, and we did 500 squats a day, and we ran a mile, and we did blow-up drills, and all that shit that we went through, and there was a lot of pain and kind of heartache going into that, but it made me appreciate everything that I ever got from wrestling and from the WWE, because, you know, I was a lifelong fan. That's what I always wanted to do, and I wanted to wrestle no matter what. But now, you know, the house I live in and the cars I drive, it's all because of the wrestling business, and going through that makes me appreciate it. You know, it makes me appreciate the fact that I don't have to necessarily get up and go to a job 9 to 5 and stuff like that, and I got to live out my dream and do this. So, I think that kind of training is good for those guys.
Well, you're definitely right about him being a controversial figure. Some people think of him as a very hard taskmaster as far as a training. Some people look at him as a very good trainer and everything. I guess it's just from your perspective what you're looking at, for sure. Have you seen the new stuff?
My son loves all the WWE stuff, and we DVR'd it. I just watched it today. I saw the second episode. Sure. Is the one that I saw. But, yeah, it looked interesting, man. It looks a lot different than it used to look when I was watching Tough Enough in high school the first time around when I wanted to begin, seeing it from the other side,
I was going to say, as one who tried out for it and one who watched in high school, how did it feel to be on the other side of, you've been in the business, in the WWE, in the fraternity, you're familiar, of course, you met Austin, Stratus, he's got, how did it feel?
It's different, man, because I always say that I'm not bitter, I enjoyed my time in WWE, I'd like to go back, but when you watch those guys, you're like, these bastards, and I'm happy for the veteran guys, what's the one guy, what's his name, Matt something? M-Dog or whatever,
yep.
He's an indie guy and stuff like that, has been going, I think there's another indie, there's a chick on there who's an indie person. I'm happy for them, but then you see the people that just walk in off the street and you're like, you bastard. You know what I mean? Because how hard that it was to get there.
Yeah, I believe that's Johnny Fairplay's girlfriend, Michelle Dayton, if I'm not mistaken. And then, I gotta say I chuckled when they had the large kid with an afro. And he said his name was Eric Watts, and I'm like, well, there you go. Nice tan, that's all I got to say. Wow.
That is fun. I'm new to Facebook, and I use it now for a lot of bookings and interview stuff and stuff like this. But I got a request the other day from a guy. I mean, obviously he's an independent wrestler, but it's just a dude with a pair of tights on. His name was Michael Hayes, and I thought that was pretty funny, too. Same kind of deal.
Michael Hayes.
I mean, I would have thought of a different name if I was going to go out on the indie circuit. A little respect there would have been good, but whatever.
Well, I was doing some commentary for with Hughes a few weeks ago. They had a guy who had changed his name to Purple Hayes who was wrestling, and I said, he don't look like Mark Lewin to me. And then I think he was the one wanted to like sidewalk slam me immediately when I said, is he in relation to Freebird Michael Hayes? And he's like, hey, he's black. And I'm like, so? He could be related.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he's Iceman. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, the Freebird Sid has Iceman
at one point. Now, I said Iceman King Parsons. Thank you very much, Icon. Anyways, but yeah, that had to be very interesting. Now you've seen both of them. Let's say, okay, you could have been on either or at 20. Which one would you rather have been on, the one you tried out for or the new Tough Enough?
Oh, hell, I don't know. That's a good question, man. I don't know. I'm too far on the other side of it to answer that without giving you a jaded answer.
okay.
Well, I don't think they really had too many obstacle courses in the 2005 one, but this one.
Well, there you go. I probably wouldn't have been crawling in the sand with my shorts around my ankles, so maybe I'd take the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the same one that Wicked Man ate a bunch of worms in the ring, so.
Yeah, I remember doing that the second obstacle course. I didn't have my drawstring and my gym shorts tied, and my shorts were around my ankles, so I was crawling through the sand basically butt-ass naked for the remaining part of the thing, so it was pretty embarrassing.
Not as embarrassing as Maven's greatest claim to fame being on that, what was it, that VH1 show or whatever. Yeah, that was pretty bad. With who was it? Lars Henderson and Alexis Arquette and all. Tony Kitane. Boy, that was... Hey, believe me, you did better than Maven. You're doing all right there. Anyways, what else here? How did you get started in this crazy business? How did you get started, I guess, as a fan? If you're not some bodybuilder that that a New Zealand sheep herder flag bearer found in Los Angeles, obviously, and how'd you get started as a fan, how'd you get started as a wrestler?
Man, the first time I saw wrestling, I was 8 years old. I was hooked, and I'm like, you know, from the time I was a kid until I grew up and did it, I told my parents I was going to be a professional wrestler. And along the way, I ended up being pretty good at football, so I had some scholarship offers and stuff like that. And the deal was, my dad said that if I graduated college, he would pay for me to go to any wrestling school in the country. Well, I ended up at this little D2 school in West Virginia called Fairmont State, and everything was going well until I found out about the local independent promotion over there. And I couldn't wait, so I would sneak down there and hang out and try to talk to the guys and stuff. And I mean, this wasn't like the best independent promotion in the world anyway. So here I am, 6'7", 315 pounds, and like, hey, I want to be in. So, you know, they kind of rushed me along. The first day I showed up for actual training, they put me in a hood, and I was in a battle royal, and that's how it started. So, and then it was pretty much on-the-job training from then on out, and I started going around and working different independents up and down the East Coast and stuff like that, and going anywhere that I could go and doing the, you know, doing the 500 miles for a case of Diet Coke and all that stuff that you hear about. And I did all that, and I loved it. But a funny story coming out of that, I had to keep my wrestling secret because I had had a full ride there. I was a center on the Fairmont State football team. And so there were only a few of my my teammates who knew about my little wrestling secret. And so one day, you know, this is when I still had some hair on my head and stuff like that. I bleached my hair blonde. I'd been laying in the tanning bed because we had a weekend off, so I got myself booked in North Carolina, and I was ready to go. But before that, we're in this little mall in Clarksburg, West Virginia. It's actually, I think, where Mick Foley had one of his first matches, the same little town. It was like my, I don't know, fifth or sixth match. But I'm in the Battle Royal, and I got the assassin hood on. I got my tattoo all taped up. And I look out, and standing right there in the front row is the football coach, the head coach. He's just giving me the eye, so I get myself eliminated real quick and jet out the back door and go home. And then 7 o'clock Monday morning, I had a message to be in his office. And that was, he called me in, the whole coaching staff was there, and they were like, we know what you're doing. And I told him, what are you guys talking about? And he got up in my face and screamed at me and said, you need to decide if you want to be the next Dusty Rhodes or you want to contribute to this football team. And I was like, fuck that. I want to be Dusty Rhodes. And they told me, you got a week to think about it. You got a week to think about it and you can report back. So my decision was made. And, I came back and told him, hey, I'm going to go wrestle and I don't want to play football anymore. And then I had to call home and tell my father that I'd given up a free education to pursue a pro wrestling career. I was making about $5 a night doing it at the time. So that was another obstacle.
Football, the Boogie Woods, hot tap, brother, hot tap.
Yeah, man. My whole thing was, you know, I thought, I was like, well, I saw Jim Duggan play the NFL. Maybe that's my ticket in, you know. Then I saw this little wrestling promotion. I couldn't resist. So, anyway.
Well, how did you? What was that danger? That was actually appropriate.
In other words, when he became what we call Dusty Rhodes and got rid of that free education, he started dining on pork and beans.
There was no king and queens.
Yeah.
He wasn't dining on pork.
There was no dining with kings and queens. No, no, there was none of that going on at that time period.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's one of the greatest Dusty promos out there.
There's a large stack of greatest Dusty promos out there. Well, how'd you get from West Virginia down to the ATL with Deep South?
When, like I said, after that Tough Enough, I had just been badgering them. And then when they opened Deep South, when they were getting ready to open it, they needed guys. So they hired 16 of us, and I was one of the original 16. Drove down here in April 2005, and that was it, man. I was there from the day that it opened to the day that it closed, so that's why I feel like, you know, I can speak on Bill DeMott in the training, because I was there for every single thing that happened, you know. It wasn't just a brief stay for me, so.
Anybody in that original class is still around in WWE?
The Miz.
Miz?
You're a world heavyweight champion, yeah.
That's what I thought.
The Miz? What, Kate? Sorry.
Was Kofi in that original class as well?
Kofi was not in the original class. Kofi came along maybe a year later, something like that. Hawkins and Ryder were down there. They weren't originals, though. They came in maybe a year, year and a half in. God, I had a picture somewhere in my house that had the originals on it. Well, you know what? Somebody, Skip Sheffield, who is back with them now, was one of the originals. And Ryan O'Reilly, who I think, I don't know if NXT is going on right now or on the internet or something, but he was just on that, I guess, I heard. I don't know.
Really? What was it like working with Jody Hamilton? We already talked about DeMott. What was it like working with Jody Hamilton? And how did you feel the way Deep South was run and everything? And that's been a lot of controversy. There's been some controversy about that. Some people liked it, some people didn't, and everything.
You know, that's hard to form an opinion on for me, especially at that time, because that was my first exposure to any kind of organized professional wrestling organization. So I was happy to be there with people who had been to the dance and who had, you know, trained people. I mean, for God's sakes, Jody Hamilton trained Triple H and Kevin Nash, you know, so it was like, here's an opportunity to hopefully sit under the learning tree a little bit. But, I mean, I was green. They busted my ass the first 6 months because they wanted to see if I'd quit or not. And then when I didn't, then they opened up the book of knowledge a little bit, you know. So, and that's how I got over with those guys because, you know, I was 20 years old and I'd never been in a ring bigger than like a 16-footer before, so this was foreign territory to me. And, you know, we had Mike Knox there and Derek Nykerk had been wrestling in Mexico and Japan and, you know, different guys who'd been to different spots, and I was just like the indie kid. But, you know, but it was different, man. I think that once we got the TV up and running and stuff, they had a good little following here in McDonough. I don't know if you guys ever went to any of the shows and stuff like that. I think the only thing that could have been done better or different was, like, they formed a little territory with that local TV and stuff. It's a shame that they didn't go around and run towns and do house shows. I thought that would have made it way better.
Sure, they did some Six Flags stuff, and I actually enjoyed the shows. I go down there happily and enjoy those. I got to see my buddy Dr. Tom down there a few times and all.
I love Dr. Tom, man.
Tom Richards is a great guy. Did you ever see anybody who came in there who thought they knew what they thought about wrestling, and they kind of got showed they didn't know as much as they thought they did?
Oh, a lot of guys, man. It always reminded me of that, I forget the documentary, but there was that old documentary in the late 90s, and it showed the guys coming into the power plant, and they had all these talking shit on the way in and on the way out. They had their heads down. They were getting in cabs and going home. There were a lot of guys that came for tryouts that were like that. Came in and had a smart mouth or whatever. Or they would try to say, oh, so-and-so says, get over with Bill. And then we'd end up blowing them up, and they never lasted. You know, that was a place where you could be humbled very quickly.
Really? So would it be the trainees who get in there with them, or DeMott himself, or...
Yeah, we would get in there with them. The trainees who had been there and been going through the routine would get in, and Bill would get in too, you know, and he was an intimidating figure. In the afternoons, once we were all dead tired and stuff, we would shoot, and I always said that, you know, trying to wrestle Bill was like trying to wrestle a really smart bear, because if you got a hold of him, you're pretty much screwed.
By showing him running into the corner on yesterday's episode, so tough enough. That was, he's a pretty scary bastard. That's what I got to say right there. Danger got something.
Yeah.
Because one of the things they showed in the first couple episodes that he actually has a hard time trying to remember all those names, and he basically came up with nicknames. Did he give you a nickname?
Yeah, I think my nickname probably wasn't appropriate because I was a young guy and I was really enjoying the bar scene and the women at that time. So I don't know if we need to say that on here.
Danger said the other guy was named Skidmark. He said it couldn't be as bad as that. But you're on your own discretion.
No, I think I was Man Whore or something like that. But it was a nasty nickname at the time. Yeah.
Man, why in the world did I just think about Steve? I just thought about Steve DeSalvo and Minotaur, and then I thought about being Noose's brother and Mantar.
I can't remember if it was that or not, but I just remember that you know, everybody always got a kick out of me out trying to chase women all the time.
Well, you might as well. I mean, you're the freaking deacon. Why not? By the way,
right, man.
By the way, I got to say one thing. I love Luke Gallows. I like Festus. I don't know where. Who thought of the freaking Deacon?
That was, man. I remember coming in there and I had these shiny white tights and this big image of being this fancy wrestler. But I also had gear with fur on at home, and I would work twice on the independents with the hood on and the furry stuff. And somebody stooged a bill that I had the fucking fur, and he made me go home and get it. And that's how that all came about. And then basically I had a license to be as weird as I could possibly come up with being, so I tried to do it. You know, and then, you know, there's always talk of they liked the creative liked the Deacon, and I remember one year I was going to run in and have a confrontation with Boogeyman at WrestleMania, and then eventually it turned out that they said that the freaking Deacon was 280s and he had to go away, so that was the end of him after, you know, 2.5 years of working on it or whatever.
If creative liked it, it's probably stupid to begin. I hate to say it, but I'm like, why are they making this man the freaking Deacon? What the hell, Willow? What, a spider? Damn, let's just go ahead and bury somebody under the ring. And I mean, bury him hard.
He had a bag lady to the dumpsters behind the school.
And then bag lady who, oh my lord.
That's a whole other cup of worms there, man.
Do what?
I said, that was a whole other cup of worms there, but she ribbed herself because every time we would I'd throw in that shopping cart and push her out the door, I'd flip the son of a bitch as soon as the door closed, and she'd go ass over 10 cups into the mud. Oh, I had a good time.
Oh, boy. The bag lady. Wow.
Right.
That was fun times, but that was hard to watch. I'm like, why are they burying this guy, you know? I like what they did with Knox. I could see that, and I knew okay. They may love Girilla here. He's not. They're gonna fire him the moment somebody sees him up there and sees that he, you know, he doesn't have he hasn't been taking his anchor pro appropriately. But
I'm glad somebody else said that.
Oh no! Make it no bones about it. The opinions I'm expressing about WWE are my own, and Luke Gallows is being a very nice guy, where he can be rehired immediately by them. But as far as it goes, I still think the freaking Deacon was painful. The pain was a gimme, not your work per se. Let's say that. But while we're at it, thoughts on Palmer Cannon? I gotta ask.
Palmer Cannon was my buddy. I don't know what in the hell happened there because Palmer Cannon was my buddy, and he was a tough guy. You know, he had an amateur background and stuff like that. And basically, I think he went overseas and they just broke him. And unfortunately, that happens to some guys. I mean, I myself, you always heard about all that stuff, but when I went up there, I was like, you know, you can't let anybody fuck with you. You got to just be respectful but be a man about it. So you know, I went out to the bar and sat down and sat next to those guys and drank with them and did my thing and kind of earned their respect, and I never got fucked with. So I guess, I don't know, man. I remember Bill sitting us all down and going, before you guys hear this, read it on the internet, Palmer Cannon quit today and he went home from the European tour. And we were like, what the fuck are you talking about? So it was a complete shocker out of left field, man. It was really weird. And I thought that, I don't know, he was developing. They could have done something with him, but, you know, just another one of those things, I guess. He's actually an MMA fighter now, believe it or not.
Come over here, JBL. I got something for you. No, never mind. he's an MMA fighter. That's interesting right here. Miz went up there and got tossed out of the locker room a few times and everything. How was Miz done here? Was he annoying, or was he okay, or any thoughts on? Not that I'm asking you to bury yourself, and if he was a jerk, but I mean, would you have expected that? I mean, how was his training whenever he came down here? Just wondering.
Well, the reason Miz is successful is because, you know, it's like they say about any successful gimmick. What you see on TV is a turned up version of his real personality. Never really rubbed me the wrong way, but there were certain people that he definitely did. But, like, he was a guy that, you know, if you read into all the lore of, you know, the horrors of Deep South and stuff, you would think that, you know, that Bill hated him and tried to torture him and stuff, but Bill liked him. He respected his work ethic and stuff like that. So anybody who would come and, you know, go through what we all went through and hang in there, and then, I mean, fuck, I can't say anything bad about the guy. He's a world champion, and I'm fired. So, you know.
You got to say one thing about the guy. Whenever Eminem was doing the best tag team wrestling in WWE a few years ago, and I got to see him live, and everybody's fawning over, you know, Mercury and Nitro and Melina and all, and it's just, you know, going gangbusters, and you got Shawn Michaels working with him and everybody working with him, and then, you know, Mercury's replaced with The Miz, and...
I got a lot of thoughts on that, actually. I don't know if it's public knowledge or not, but Joey's one of my best friends. And I, you know, that whole deal with Joey, that really sucked, because that was a deal with, you know, his personal demons at that time got the best of him, you know, and because I think that Joey still, he's what, 30, 31 years old right now, is one of the most underrated talents in the business. And I mean, Morrison, it's when he was younger and wasn't as seasoned as he. And Joey held that thing together. If you go back and watch them working with like the stuff they did with Eddie Guerrero and Ray and Chavo,
sure.
And I mean, he was awesome. And then I got to see, you know, we were in Australia, and I thought having some of the best matches on the card working with the Hart Dynasty, and I would stand on the apron and watch him and Tyson Kidd work and be like, this is fucking awesome. I was marking out, you know. I mean, just
sure.
Really good stuff. And I, you know, It's good for them in the system to have Joey down there in Florida right now, but I think it's a damn shame that somebody's not utilizing him in some fashion on the road. You know, even if he was in the middle and helping to teach guys as they go along and stuff like that, it's a shame, you know. Plus, that guy deserved a big payday for as good as he was, and I don't think he ever really got it.
Well, I kind of liked doing the mask thing at first. That was kind of neat when he brought him back. I just hated the fact that, you know, He had the trouble. But where I was going with that was, after Eminem's just dominating, they put Miz in there, and you're thinking, well, doggone, there goes the team. Because everybody, it's Nitro and it's Mercury. And Miz wasn't holding people back, and Miz just steadily got better. And for him to start eclipsing Mercury, no one would have seen that. I thought the Wizard of Oz was the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of. And,
oh, hell yeah. I
was surprised. I'm thinking, you know, what is this? I mean, you know, road rules? Come on, you know. And for him to come out there and give his interviews and have Alex Trolley with him now, I mean, whether the people like it or not, or think he's a worthy champion or not, he's one of the best alternatives they got.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's a guy that everybody said no to, and he proved everybody wrong.
Kane on the phone. I'll be back in a second.
So it's just excuse my son's in the bathtub. Sorry.
No problem. No problem. But believe me, I know bathing doesn't stop just for the David Danger show. Well, by the danger, we don't pay for the show, but anybody else can. Let's see here. Thoughts of the Kane versus a fake Kane storyline? How it ended, and if you feel you got any heat over that, or wrongly over that?
Well, I'll tell you how it started out wrong right off the bat. They sent me out on TV the first Monday looking like Dee Snider. They didn't give me a chance. I had this 80s fucking wig on. I felt like a complete asshole. I was trying to wet it down and pour conditioner, and I needed a human hair wig. My mother's a hairdresser. I knew that. And I said, can we get me a human hair wig? We don't have one. And I'm like, it's a billion-dollar fucking company. I look like an idiot. And I did. And then, you know, they got the wig fixed, but I don't think people ever really got it. But, I mean, the point of that thing wasn't to get me over or anything like that anyway. It was to promote Glenn's movie, and, you know, hopefully it did that. And I was never disappointed in the match. I mean, I was 22 at the time and went out there on pay-per-view, and I worked with him doing all his shit. Kudos to Bill DeMott. Bill would, I have to do the practices and everything like everybody else, and then we come back at 7 o'clock at night, and it was like MVP, Knox, and Mike Taylor were sworn to secrecy, and we'd do fake Kane practice, and we'd watch tapes, and I would, you know, go over his moves and mannerisms for hours, and I really tried my best to get it down to mimic it, you know, the best I could. I mean, I'm obviously not him, but, tried.
Did I was going to say, did Kane or did he have any thoughts or any feedback? Was he pleased or displeased, or he mentioned anything about your performance?
He was great. He came to Deep South and worked with me, and he liked the performance in the match. He was always a guy that always, if I could model after a guy in the business, it would be him. Was always very helpful to me, even after that. And then, you know, working with him again as Luke and stuff like that. He was very cool. But he couldn't have been better. It just, when we walked out there on that pay-per-view, I don't think people knew what the fuck to expect. It's like, what is this? It was weird. It was just like Undertaker versus Undertaker, you know? And it's like,
yeah, I was going to bring that up. It's kind of like it didn't do a whole lot for Brian Lee either, so.
Right. I mean, it was just awkward. And you know, I mean, we tried, and we were out there working, and I don't know if we went 10 minutes or something like that, but the people don't know what they're supposed to cheer for in that situation, and they were dead on their asses, and, you know, we kind of come back, and we're like, well, fuck, you know, we tried. I don't know, you know?
Especially so, when you had at the pay-per-view, it was you versus the Kane, and they put you over, because it was like Kane versus the Mask. We're going to find out who you were. And out of surprise, they put you over, and the crowd just, they didn't know what to expect. They just,
right,
they had no reaction to it. They were more confused about the whole thing.
Well, plus, I mean, if I were a fan in the crowd, I would be like, why is the phony guy winning? I mean, honestly, you know. That was, at the time, you know, I didn't know. I'm 22, you know. I'm happy to be there. And then, you know, I get to TV the next day, and they say, you haven't done anything wrong, but we're shit-canning the gimmick. And I was temporarily crushed, but then I was like, well, I mean, you know, I haven't been around long. I know I'm green, but I know this ain't shit ain't working, you know. So it was like, that was kind of that. And then,
right, because especially when it was when Kane just basically beats you up, takes the mask off. We don't see who you are, but he just throws you out the door. And
right.
That was it. And it just basically...
Yeah, they were very adamant about not seeing my face because at that time the plan was for the freaking Deacon to come to SmackDown later in the summer, which actually, you know, never came to fruition or whatever. But, yeah, it was weird. It was a month of getting to go on the road and do a little something, you know. So, you know, was what it was. I always get asked about it, too. Like, nobody will let the fucker die.
I was going to say, at least you got a run, because poor Brian Lee, I don't even think he got another run in there after that.
He was changed, wasn't he? The DOA run,
no,
right?
Yes, he was changed. You're right. But, I mean, as far as, you know, something
right.
to
no,
work
no, I know,
top.
Right, no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're
something
saying.
Something to work the top and everything. I mean, at least you didn't want him in the spirit squad.
Jesus Christ, yeah, that's the truth.
Andrew, so you'll be one top cheerleader. About some Dalton boys.
Man, that was, it's all kind of ties together. I went to TV, and they were going to debut the freaking Deacon, and all of a sudden nobody liked the spider, and everything was too weird, so it was kind of like, just go back and be you, and I was like, I'm going to get fired if I don't come up with something quick, and they had my old buddy Ray Gordy, was going to be the new Godwins. They had Henry hired on, and they were working down there and stuff. You might remember that a few times. And then Henry had some personal issues and had to leave the company, and they were looking for a big redneck. And they brought in Big Tilly from Florida, and they brought up Jacob Duncan from OVW, and nothing was clicking. None of the guys knew Ray. And I was like, dude, I choose Skull and listen to country music and wear cowboy boots. I can do this. Let's do it. And then we literally stole promo material from Larry the Cable Guy, and I wrote all these vignettes, and we went out to an old junkyard and hot-wired a truck and all that shit, and then sent it to the office, and they said, all right, that's it, you're doing it. And then we went up and did some darks, and they liked us, and then we were getting ready to debut on TV after we'd done the one thing in the back with Teddy, and Vince called us to his office an hour before doors and said, I have an idea for something we'd never had before. I knew this guy, and his tongue hung out of his mouth, and he was crazy, and that's how that all began.
So, because Vince knew a guy whose tongue hung out of his mouth. You want to be invested.
That's what he said, you know. And he's Vince McMahon, and I'm Drew, so I'm not gonna say that he was lying to me or ribbing me, but it turned into a decent little run for me, I guess you'd say.
So, I guess I'm fascinated by Vince McMahon. What's what's McMahon like? I mean, you know, how does he interact with talent? I'm just, you know,
In the WWE office, does he actually strut like he does on TV?
You know, just give me some ideas about me, man. Because, I mean, you know, after being a billionaire, owning your company, doing it all already, you know, what more can he do? I mean, he just, you know, he seems very interesting.
Well, I mean, he can do whatever the hell he wants. He's the king of the whole business. You know? So he was always cool to me, and he was personable, and he would, you know, if it wasn't like a business situation, he would joke around with the boys and stuff like that. And, you know, but when you first go up there, and being as young as I was when I was first there, it's damn intimidating to be around this guy who built this empire, and it's everything you've ever wanted to do and everything you've ever watched, and you got all this shit at home in your house that you collected, and all this was all his creation, and there he is standing right in front of you going,
"How you doing?"
It's like, shit, you know? So, I mean, he was always cool to me. I don't have any complaints about him or anything like that. It was just, you know, he's a big personality, but I think that if anybody deserves the right, especially in this wacky business, to be a big personality, it's definitely him.
Sure. I'm not trying to get you in trouble or say anything negative on Vince or anything, but you know, I was going to say, how much is he involved in, you know, in Raw and producing stuff and all? I mean, is his finger always in something, or does he delegate a lot? I hear he's hands on. You know, any thoughts on that, or?
I don't know what's going on now because, I hear that Triple H has a heavier role. But the whole time I was there, Vince was hands-on. I mean, they're out in the afternoon, and he's, you know, he watches over everything, you know. And because, you know, it is his kingdom, and he's kept it afloat for this long and still making money and turning profits and doing global business and all that stuff. So I think that anybody like that, if you look at any facet of business, I mean, I'm sure Bill Gates is probably kind of the same way, you know, and Vince is probably as hands-on as he can be.
Did he ever come out and just, you know, like surprise you that, you know, I watched your match and I have some advice or anything like that, or is that really not his style? Does the agents do that? Or?
He's right behind the curtain, man. He sits in Gorilla where we come out. He's right behind that at a table with a headset on. So you knew if you came back and, you know, a couple times I came back and got the standing ovation. A couple times I came, you know, you come back and get the nod, you're good, but if you come back and he's cussing in the headset, that's usually not good. So I didn't get that too many times.
Ah.
You know.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
The agents are more, the agents relay the messages pretty much more than anything with that.
Sure. I was going to say thoughts of Festus and Jesse and everything.
You know, my whole thing there, I wanted us to turn heel. And I had this far out idea, because I'm a big wrestling mark, that, you know, the last thing that Terry Gordy ever did was get beaten by The Undertaker, and then he basically went home and died. And I wanted, I pitched this idea to say that, you know, basically that they had raised me and nurtured me from the time that, you know, I was small, because they knew that there was something different, this animalistic side of me, and I was the big kid and all this stuff. You know, we were going to grow up and avenge Terry Gordy's death and, you know, put Ray in the suit and tie and have him kind of be the mouthpiece and go after Taker as heels. And that's what, like, I always thought it was a cool idea that we could show, like, you know, him basically finishing off Ray's dad and Ray saying all his heartfelt stuff and then bringing Michael Hayes on TV and then, you know, having me run through people and, you know, shit like that. This was just all the stuff that I had as an idea, a way to, like, for Jesse and Festus to go from the fun-loving country bumpkins that, like, you know, we never got a title run, which I think sucked, but there was a time when we were over and we didn't really need it. But, you know, I thought we could have evolved from that into other stuff, but we never got the chance to. I thought what happened to Ray sucked, turned him into Slam Master Jay, and then, you know, Dark Match fired Roll. Because I thought he was a talented dude, and I don't think that he ever got a real fair shake after that. And he did all that work and got himself in great shape and stuff like that, and then just kind of that was it. So, you know.
Did people look at it as, did anyone ever make comment or anything? Because, you know, Michael Hayes and Gordy were tagging partners and close and all. did people respect Ray for his work, or was it more you're here because of who your daddy was and who your daddy was friends with?
I think he got that stigma from some people, not a lot, but I don't think it was deserved. Because, I mean, I saw Ray's stuff in Japan years before he came to WWE, and I thought he was a good worker. I think that people, it's funny, because people who held a grudge against the Freebirds from years before I don't know, I'm just speculating, may have held a grudge against him for something that he had nothing to do with. He was just at home being a little kid, you know what I mean? So, but that's how wrestling works sometimes.
So, let me digest that right there. Me and Angel look at each other like we're about to pop here. So, Ray Gordy comes back out in a suit, whatever. When Terry Gordy came here, you wouldn't even let him be Terry Gordy. You put him in a hood as executioner when Undertaker beat him. That's all he had left.
Killed his career, and then he died.
He had nothing else to fight for. He just went home. That's a pretty hard angle, though, for WWE. I could see something like that in Memphis or something. But that's a pretty...
It was heavy shit, but I just had this vision of how we could pull it off, you know, and I really thought it would have been sweet, but...
As a matter of fact, that's not... I could almost see that. Hey, if you had, Undertaker, this is one time where I'm taking you out and have Hayes involved and...
Right.
Hayes can be involved, and that would be very interesting.
Yeah, that's what I want. I wanted Hayes to be the puppeteer because, Terry was gone, and then Michael had to raise us as his own. There's all this crazy shit that I thought. I mean, it never came about, so it doesn't matter, but I had all these crazy, fantasy Booker meetings in my own head about it.
I would like that. Nature, not in the, it's like, that sounds pretty cool right there. Wow. Thoughts on the Slam Master J gimmick, and you being drafted to Raw?
I was shocked. They called me up and said, congratulations, you're going to Raw. And I said, what about Ray? And they go, he's staying on SmackDown. I was like, oh. And I'll be honest with you, I was worried about it. I'll stay in my bedroom. I was worried about him right from the get-go, because I was like, what are they going to do with a Jesse? What is a Jesse? You know what I mean? It's almost like a Jesse needs a Festus, so he needed a new gimmick, but Slam Master J wasn't it,
And Ray's not the largest guy in the world, neither. So, right. Who can you feud him with?
Right.
Nunzio, FBI's a referee,
Yeah.
You got Ray who is doing, they're... People like Adrian Street and Dundee be the smallest guys in the Federation. So what are you going to do with Ray Gordy and everything on SmackDown?
Yeah, that was, they had him tagging with Jimmy Yang on house shows, and they're having good matches, but they don't like tag teams, and they're both small, so you knew it wouldn't go anywhere. So that was kind of the problem.
No. Well, they definitely don't like that. Speaking of tag teams, call some Straight Edge Society. We already said that she should have been a tag team champion. For what my opinion is, then again, whenever they had the Attitude Era, I thought Patterson and Briscoe should have been tag champs. So maybe my ideas aren't that great, but
yeah, I felt like we should have, especially at the time. There was one point where they slowed down Punk a little bit, and we were working with the Hearts, and Joe was still on the outside, and I was like, shit, it'd be great, for us to be the tag champ, even if he wins more gold, because at that time, it looked like we were going to be a strong stable for, a good amount of time, which, ended up blew apart several months later. But, yeah, that's one of those things. It's a bucket list thing, is to win a belt in the WWE. Sure. I definitely would like to have that on the resume. But, I got time still. So.
Did you have any edicts from the office when you were in the Straight Edge Society? Like, don't be drinking beer in public. Don't be dipping snuff. Anything?
Well, Here's another. This is I'll bury myself. But everybody knows that I'm a party guy. I'm not a drug guy, but I like to go out after the matches and go to the honky tonk and drink beer and raise hell and chase women or do whatever. But when Punk and I are friends, and you know, they told him basically they wanted to have a heater. He didn't think he needed one, and he doesn't. But he said, why not use Festus? Because at the time I was sitting at home, they had me, I got this $5,000 outfit and mask made. They wanted this new mask guy, and then they didn't like the outfit, and I was just toiling, you know, because we're all Festus sucked. There's nobody, there's nothing to do with them. So, you know, I needed a change of pace too, and so he told me he was going to push for me, and I was like, great. And then basically they came and looked at me in Florida, and I dropped, like, you know, 40 pounds and was moving good and stuff, and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And I called him, and I was like, hey, man. I said, no, let's do this old school. I go, I'm not going to – as long as we run this gimmick, I won't have a drink in public. And, I, you know, and that we adopted
wow.
that. And, you know, Joey's been sober for almost 1,000 days now, so we didn't have to worry about him, you know, and stuff like that. And that was kind of our deal, was it, you know. And I didn't, man. I didn't go out drinking the whole time. So.
How
I
rough was it
a couple times since I've been let go, but
how rough was that on you, being a party guy yourself?
It wasn't so bad because Punk and I, we got along good and we would room together and ride together and hang out and stuff. So, you know, the boys were all going out to the bar. Punk wasn't going anyway, so we'd hang out in a room and get room service and watch movies or watch wrestling or do whatever. I was always close with the guys I was on the road. Like, Jesse and I always rode and roomed together too. So, you know, and that was different than being with Punk because Jesse was up for another beer in another town and, you know, Punk was different. So just doing our thing. But I wanted to respect the gimmick, because I mean, if we're on TV shaving people's heads and talking all this shit, and then you go out and see me shooting Jack in the bar, well, that doesn't mean shit. So.
Did you meet anybody on the street who actually wanted to get their head shaved to join up and get the salvation of CM Punk?
Oh yeah. We had a lot of people that would come up to us and ask to pull out of the crowd or whatever and stuff like that. Yeah, definitely. We had a lot of haters too, but I mean, that was part of the fun of it.
It's just amazing how you think of it. You reverse it. You take it back to 81. You know, don't drink. Don't. We had San Martino on here. He wouldn't even take half. He wouldn't even drink a glass of wine in public because he didn't want the wrong impression of a champion drinking a glass of wine because it might, you know, give someone the wrong message. And they got someone that says, I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't take prescription medication. And they're booed out of the building.
And he's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy.
I don't know if that's a reflection of our society or partially in the way it was presented, but he was damn good at doing it. I mean, we're in San Francisco one night, and it was awesome. It was old school. Like, you know, we had Serena said something, and then I started the promo, and then by the time he got the mic and started his magic, I mean, it started with, like, quarters and beers, and then I don't know where they're getting batteries from and cell phones and whatever wasn't nailed down, basically. It was awesome, you know. But, We did a six-man that night, and I think we went home after about 6 minutes because it was, like, to the point where we were like, shit, man, we got to get out of here. So.
Okay. Now, some people question if Punk actually is serious about that. I've heard he is very serious, but you travel with him. Your take on that?
On being straight edge?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I've stayed in hotel rooms with him for a month at a time. If he wasn't straight edge, I would know it. And that's the God's honest truth. I mean, there's no way. I mean, that is 110% legit with him. I don't know anybody else that I could say that about, really. But with him, it's a shoot, man, the whole thing.
Danger said something about, now, I'm not sure what he said he's going to say, but he said something about he had an addiction. What's the danger?
Well, because I follow him on Twitter, and the funniest thing he puts on there is all the junk food, and he loves candy. And to me, candy can be an addiction.
Man, we used to have cheat day every Tuesday night after TV, and we would all we would gorge because we died all week, and we'd go eat fried food and ice cream and drink regular soda and, you know, basically just gorge ourselves. So maybe that's what he's talking about. I don't know. he still does have a cheat day because I just had him down here WrestleMania week and we were eating giant hamburgers and ice cream and stuff.
Wow. Danger, we had a question about Festus.
Yeah, because I know with Festus, he came out to be, it was like he was a mentally disabled person, mentally challenged, and when he heard the bell, then he came to this angry person that took everything out of his path. Now, did you get any, like, backlash of playing, like, a mentally challenged person? Were they people just upset about how...
No, I never really got anything negative on the character. I worried about that at first, but I think it helped that we were baby faces and we were very friendly with the fans and stuff like that. And we never really had any backlash. The most awkward I ever felt doing it, we were in Florida for I was a special guest for Florida Championship Wrestling. Once I got moved to Raw and I wasn't doing as much, they would book me down there sometimes, just go kind of be like the WWE guy on the show. And we were working in a bar, and you come out on the stage entranceway, and there were like 50 or 60 mentally handicapped children there. And I have a kid myself, and I have a big soft spot for kids. I was beside myself about going out, but you know, the music hit, and I came through the curtain, and they were all happy. They were ecstatic to see me. So I did a 10-minute entrance, and I went by and you know, shook hands and hugged every kid that was out there, and they were all happy, and it made me feel good. And I think that's one of the nice things about being an entertainer in this business. It was really, you know, that was a show with 200 people there, and it's something I'll never forget. It was a really feel-good kind of deal, you know, and it made me feel okay about doing it because I think that they saw me as, you know, kind of like, you know, I don't know, one of them or something like that, and playing out
you
there.
You can do what I can do.
Right. So, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, let's see here. One of the things I was going to ask you about is you haven't really done a whole lot in Georgia since you come back. Or have you? Well, I think you wrestled some shows up in maybe Clayton, Georgia or something. Or where all have
yeah,
you
I
in
did,
Georgia?
I went up there and did a show. The day after I got fired, I rode up there and just my buddy Nigel was on the show, and I did a little appearance with them. And then I wrestled up there a week or two ago. And then I wrestled for Bill in December right after I got let go. But that's been about it, man. There's not, I don't know. Maybe Georgia doesn't like the big LG. It seems like I'm going everywhere else, though. So, but any Georgia promoters who would like to have Luke Gallows on their show can contact me direct at bookbiglg@gmail.com. Or official Luke Gallows on Facebook and at Real Gallows on Twitter. So that's all my hype.
Let me rehype it because I'm hard of hearing anyways. Now that's book. Now let me see here. That's book. Big LG.
Big LG. Yep. At
gmail.com. If someone in Georgia or surrounding areas, Tennessee, South Carolina, anywhere, we'd like to book Big Luke Gallus. Book BigLG@gmail.com. Now, where's the Facebook page at?
The Facebook page is Official Luke Gallows.
Official Luke Gallows is the official Facebook page. So people can go in there and be able to friend you, and if promoters want to contact you there, they can do that as well.
I do a lot of business up there. I didn't know that thing actually worked, but it does.
cool. And you also said on Twitter, it's what again was it?
Twitter is at Real Gallows.
At Real Gallows, okay. All right, I want to make sure everybody gets that and hears that because, well, you came on the show, we'll be happy to push you and everything. For sure.
Hit me up, even if it's just to say hello.
Absolutely. What was it like, you talk about at the IGF or Anoki, so you've been wrestling some talent, Jesse Neal, Sean Waltman, Tommy Dreamer, Jesse Neal and Sean Waltman, and then you've also taken on Tommy Dreamer at an NWS card. Thoughts of wrestling various opponents after leaving WWE?
Oh, man, I love it. It's a thrill, especially, you know, other guys in the business that, you know, you haven't been in the same company with and stuff like that. It's awesome. It's fun. I had a blast working with Dreamer up in Jersey. You know, he put on a great show for him and stuff like that. It's fun, man. I still love to work and wrestle. And it's, you know, so if you see me out there, I'm having a good time, especially, I don't know, now that on some of these independent shows and stuff like that, I can get to be myself a little bit, and I really get a kick out of it, man. It's a blast. And, you know, if you don't love doing it, you shouldn't be doing it. That's how I feel about it. And Tommy Dreamer is another guy who's the epitome of that because he still loves to perform. So anytime I can mix it up with him, it's a good time.
Sure, absolutely. Where'd the name Keith Hansen come from once you're competing at, with Inoki?
Basically, they saw me, I guess, some of my Festus stuff, and I reminded them a lot of Stan. So
really?
That's what I'm doing over there now. I got the hat and the chaps, and I'm back in the trunks and all that. And, you know, growing up and being, especially as I got older and then started getting into the business, I was always a big fan of Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen. So it's an honor for me to get to go out there and kind of carry the name a little bit, so especially in Japan.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Which wrestlers have inspired you? You mentioned Hansen, you mentioned Rhodes and Brody. Any other wrestlers that inspired your career, I guess?
Oh, man, that's a hard question because I think somebody who's a you know, come up as big of a fan and as obsessed with this stuff as I was. There's so many different guys that I like certain things about and was influenced by and stuff like that. I loved Jake Roberts growing up. I always liked the big guys because I was always a big guy. But, you know,
sure.
Taker, there were a ton of guys, man. So,
what's it like being in the ring with Taker? Just seeing the match with Triple H and some of his matches, and the way you see how, you know, the lights come on and all that stuff, it's just got to be an interesting phenomenon. Even though stuff's, you know, people talk about wrestling being predetermined, whatever, you know what's going to happen, but still, that's got to be pretty heavy right there. Not just as a fan, but you know, going to work against that.
Well, It's awesome. I mean, you talk about a thrill. That's a guy that, you know, that's a guy that I grew up on. That run started there in 1990 with him. So it's like getting to stand in the ring and hear the gong and see the music and feel the electricity of the people and go like, fuck, this is my time to prove that I can go with this dude. I mean, there's no high like that, I don't think. I mean, it's so cool. Very, very cool.
Indeed, indeed. Pretty much joining in right now, we're talking with Luke Gallows, 347-324-5735. I was going to say, any favorite opponents you had working up there in WWE or at Deep South?
God, there were so many. I mean, obviously, you know, Taker and Kane. I really enjoyed doing stuff with them. I had fun when we were when I was tagging with Jesse and we were working with Miz and Morrison. Love the matches that Joey Mercury and I had. Never had them on TV, but we had an overseas series with the Hearts that I loved doing. I think that, you know, all three of them are very talented, and I hope that that pays off for them. But, yeah, there's a lot of talented people out there that I enjoyed working with. And, you know, getting to just be around and see how they do things, I think that shapes the performer. So, you know, it was always a privilege for me to be in there with somebody who had more tenure or a veteran guy or something like that, and very cool, you know.
Sure. Any thoughts on, I was going to ask you, I know that Jeff Hardy didn't seem that to like a lot of comments that Punk had made after he got in his legal troubles.
Right.
Any thoughts on that, or any thoughts on is that something that just came up with, or would you, do you even know?
No, I don't know, and I always, you know, I've always considered myself one of the boys, and you know, I've gotten along pretty well with just about everybody, and Punk and the Hardys have had their differences, but I've been able to remain, you know, friends with both sides, so I try to stay out of it as much as possible. I mean, I went to the Hardy's Christmas party and saw him, and it was great. I hadn't seen him in a while and stuff like that, so, you know, that's just something that I wash my hands of, man, because that has nothing to do with me. Whatever that rivalry is and whatever it was born out of was not something I was around for, so I try to steer clear of all that.
Keeping your nose clean generally is a very good policy in any business, especially wrestling, I've seen.
That is correct, sir.
Keeping it out of it. Quick question. You mentioned you're a wrestling fan. Got to ask, it's no longer World Wrestling Entertainment, it's WWE. World Wrestling Entertainment or WWE? Which do you prefer?
Name-wise?
Well, they took the wrestling out of that, and Danger's been having a real bad case of the butt about it, because he's like, well, since they don't want to be wrestling, they can't be WrestleMania. And I'm like, Danger, that's silly. Of course they're going to be WrestleMania. But I know, I heard that. It's not right, Danger. I hear you. But
it's not World Wrestling Entertainment anymore?
It's just WWE, kind of like KFC now. That's what McMahon is. What? Okay. Well, I'm not trying to get you. All right, the Danger's over here popping and clapping for you now. But
yeah, I don't like that. I mean, that's one thing. I'm embarrassed to call myself a wrestler. I mean, I know that wrestling, you know, certain people in certain circles don't like it, but it ain't for everybody, you know. So I understand that from a marketing perspective that it's a, you know, they want to be mainstream and stuff like that, but I think they're doing a pretty damn good job of it. I mean, people know that it's wrestling. There's still a ring, and they're still wrestlers, so I don't, you know.
Well, you've been up there so much. Okay, you've been up around them, though. They don't like wrestling. They like sports entertainment. They don't like wrestler. They like superstar.
You can't call it a belt.
Yeah, I know you can't call it a belt. It's a championship. I'm aware of those things, Danger. But why is so? I mean, McMahon is arguably, and it becomes less argument every day. Arguably, probably the greatest wrestling promoter that we've had on Earth at this time. Because he pretty much has a monopoly of the business right now. You know, TNA's got a small footprint, Ring of Honor's, you know, got a few folks. But there's not been, you know, I mean, as far as nationwide marketing, I mean, he's got it. But it just seems that they continually want to expand into films and movies and this and that, and they're just not pleased that they're the best at what they do, but they're ashamed of it.
I agree with you. I've never gotten that. I remember, you know, and this is probably taboo to say, but I don't have a contract with either company right now, but I always watch, you know, the product that everybody puts out, and I like those TNA commercials they had, and they were all when I was still in WWE, and they said that, you know, I forget how it was worded, but basically they were saying, we're not embarrassed to call ourselves wrestlers. And, you know, I always kind of felt the same way, like, you know, get it, we're entertainers, but damn. So,
To me, it just disrespects the people that became before the wrestlers of today, is that they pay their dues for nothing if they're going to take the wrestling away from it and be entertainers. And it's just, to me, it's just a lack of respect.
Right. I agree with that, man, because it's still... I don't care how much entertainment you throw in there. I mean, go to a WWE house show. You're going to watch 7 matches. They're going to have hopefully some length to them and some quality performance. And wrestling is what brought them in there, because on those shows there are no fireworks. There's no glitz. There's no glamour. There's no commercial with celebrities. It's wrestlers in a ring wrestling. That's what the people buy the ticket to see, and that's what entertains them, and that's why when you come back to the town that they're back there, you know, ready to see it again. So... still wrestling, man.
Well, good point. It may not endear you very much to them, but I definitely agree with you on that. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, I'll tote the company line, you know. And I like I said, I understand that it's entertainment, and I understand the crossover appeal and being mainstream. I'm all for that. But I just don't see how it's wrong to say wrestling. That's my only point there.
Well, it's a very good point. Like you said, you got Japan. You got some tours coming up. Let's go over, the top three, in the U.S. right now. Let's see you get a call. Would you be interested in possibly going to a Ring of Honor, a TNA, a WWE? Let's start with ROH first. How interested would you be?
I'd be interested in any kind of new opportunity like that. You know, I'm looking for opportunities now to further my career from what I've already done. So if I go somewhere, I want to be in the mix and, carrying an important role. So anywhere that was available, I would do it. But like I said before, I've been fortunate enough with hustling and getting together this international stuff to where I did pretty damn good at it. So I don't need that, but there's always the yearning to go back and to be on television here in the United States and have that feeling that I had for the last, 5 or 6 years or whatever of being one of those TV guys. But, I'm still fresh enough off that business is still coming in and has been really good to me, especially in the international markets. So, I watch TNA, I watch Ring of Honor. I got a lot of friends in both companies, and I know everybody in WWE. So, I guess it just depends on whatever opportunity presents itself,
Sure.
Policy with those other companies, if I could still go and do my overseas stuff when I wasn't working there, or how any of that really works. So.
Mm. Have you had a chance to watch any of the Ring of Honor, or any thoughts on their product?
Yeah, I watch Ring of Honor. Cole Cabana is a really good friend of mine, and I like it. It's different. I don't know that my style is necessarily a Ring of Honor kind of style, but I'm a big fan of Claudio and his partner and Cole and different guys like that. And I like the Jim Cornette flavor going there too, because I'm a fan of Jim Cornette and his style and stuff like that. So. That was cool. I dropped Colt off at the Ring of Honor show in Atlanta here over WrestleMania weekend, and got a chance to go in and actually meet Jim for the first time, and Bushwhacker Luke and some of the Ring of Honor guys and stuff, and it was cool, So.
Very interesting. What about TNA? I make no bones about it. I'm not a big fan of TNA. I personally don't care for Vince Russo products. I go out of my way.
The product is there. It's just the booking is not.
Well, I go out of my way not to watch, and I don't care for Terry Taylor for a personal issue. But anyways, now that I got it out of the way, your thoughts on TNA as a product, and would you be able to, if you feel you could add something to that?
Well, I think that I could add something anywhere that I went, and I think the product is improving, and like I said, I do watch every week. But it's now TNA almost feels like that lost WWE family, because there's more and more people showing up on that show who I knew, during my earlier time in WWE. I feel like I know, through the independents or through working for WWE or whatever, pretty much everybody who's down there, and I've talked about it with some friends and stuff like that, and it would just it depends on the opportunity. It depends on
would
be presented.
Well,
if I could do something that mattered as far as the programming was concerned.
Sure. Well, I don't know how reliable it is, but was it Danger last night? Supposedly Dixie Carter's over at TNA. Supposedly her mother's over it. That was from who? Honky Tonk Man?
Honky Tonk Man.
Well, if you believe the Honky Tonk Man, apparently Dixie's not over it anymore. It's her mother. I don't know. I haven't heard confirmation, but...
Her mother bought TNA from her?
I don't know. According to what I understand and what Danger and I did, Honky Tonk Man or something made an announcement that there was going to be a management change and... her mother was going to oversee TNA instead of her or something. So I don't know.
She lacks the knowledge of how to run a wrestling business. And there's just so much turmoil that's happening. She's trying to basically save the company and turn it over to somebody who may know something. So.
Well, that could be a lot of things. That could be Honky making a story or... don't forget years ago when they had the Kobe Bryant rape trial in Los Angeles, Tom Lankus radio shows named the Kobe's accuser, where he put himself in there instead of did Kobe Bryant rape so-and-so lady. It was should Tom Lankus have given her name. So he's either he may know something and maybe breaking news, or he may be inserting stuff in a story where people like you and me mention his name. You never can tell, and I suppose we'll find out later in a week if that's the case. I have heard that they have had some money trouble as of late, so I don't know how true that is. I'm not going to reveal my sources, but I'm not the only
sure.
one.
No, I think, I mean, you always hear rumblings, but I think that I think time will tell, and I mean, you know, I don't know who's in charge there. I don't work there, so... I guess we'll all just have to wait and find out and see what happens, you know. And hopefully whatever it is, it's good for the business. That's all that I that's all I want to see.
Mm-hmm. Danger had a good question. Larry? You never did have any contact with Larry Sweeney, did you? Sweet and Sarah Larry Sweeney? Or did
I met Larry Sweeney once. I heard about, I guess, what happened yesterday, and it's a damn shame. It's... It really is. I don't know how you put that into words, and now it's like it used to be, you know, when I was first getting into business and stuff, you know, 9, 8, 9, 10 years ago, it was guys that I grew up watching, and now it's guys that I know, so it makes it way harder.
Sure.
It sucks because it becomes more real. It's somebody that you sat in the locker room across from or called a match with or went out and had a beer with or worked out at the gym with or whatever, and... it doesn't make it any easier.
I can imagine so. I'm just looking at the Observer site, and it says Heartland Wrestling Association star Chip Fairway passed away. He's 38, passed away on Saturday. So they didn't have any other details, so go figure. Wow.
Yeah, it's still coming in threes, man. I don't know. That sucks.
I've heard it comes in threes too, Dane. You got something?
Yeah, it's just one thing when you're coming into developmental and we're looking at the wrestlers, and a lot of deaths happen where they're under 40. Were there any speeches given about, like, the drug use or the partying?
Yeah. I think, you know, the whole wellness policy came into effect about a year after I was there, I guess, in 2006, and that was all. And I believe that... that was done to protect the wrestlers and their families because, you know, outside of the public image of the whole thing, which is obviously important on a business side of things, but that wellness policy is real. And, you know, I did get tested frequently, and I think that it's you know, it's a necessity because it's the entertainment business, man. I mean, you can look at Hollywood or anything like that. People battle demons, and we live a different kind of life. It's not necessarily normal, so I think people have to be monitored with their extracurricular activities, and I think that that policy is a good thing, and I'm sure that it's, you know, we don't know who those people are because they don't need to be named because their lives were saved by it, so if that happened, if it did happen, then that's good, you know. So.
Sure. They said, I understand they made additions since they started adding stuff like Zomas and marijuana to it as well, so
they've added a lot to it and bulked it up and stuff like that, and, you know, different guys have different feelings and all that, but I think in general the policy is a positive step for sure.
I'm sure that if someone enjoys participating in certain stuff they might not like it, but overall you say you feel it's actually done some good is what you say.
No, I do I really do. You know, I just, when you look at this, just from a numbers perspective, and it's a horrible way to look at life and death, but I think that, you know, there have been guys die, of course, since the policy's come into effect, but I don't think anybody has been under contract and passed away or anything like that. So.
Well, and I will say one thing. I'll be one of the first to talk bad about TNA, and I will say I'm not the most favorable on McMahon because of, you know, I differ on the independent contract issue and other things like that. But I will say one thing. Even though he says it's strictly PR, I applaud him for paying for rehab for anybody who's been under his contract. But that right there is...
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I, th- I think that that's a stand-up thing to do. And I mean, you know, that I got that letter when I got let go, and then I just got another one lately. And it's basically, they just check up on you, and if you need help, you can anonymously call the number, and they'll set it up for you and get you taken care of. So I think that that's a great thing for people out there, you know, whether they're, you know, a current star or somebody who worked there 30 years ago that finds himself, you know, losing control a little bit or whatever takes place. You know, I think that's a great thing. So hopefully it helps people.
Yeah, watching Raw last night, thought of Edge coming out and retiring.
I didn't know about that until today. I got on Facebook, and there's all this stuff about, like, we will miss you, Edge. And I was like, well, holy shit. You know, good for him. I mean, that's a guy that he's done his time on the road and was a great performer and saved his money. And I think he's going to go live in the mountains and hang out with his dogs. So good for him.
Good deal, I tell you. He's worked hard and been a real good champion, and done a lot good and bad. Like you said, some stuff he's proud of, some stuff he's not. And I applaud him. I'm for anybody who can get out of here and move on to other things. You know, whether it's Jericho Dancing with the Stars or Edge being able to have a successful life with his children and wife or whatever, that's just great and everything.
It's good, you know, and that's something, you know, that's another thing. You go back to talking about that policy and stuff. I mean, Edge has always been a clean cut, straight up guy, but you know, it's nice to see guys being able to retire from the business, and you know, they have their money and they're okay and they're still young and they're not crippled and things like that. You know, it's positive. It's good.
Real quickly, any shows, dates in Georgia or anything? I know you said let's respect everybody on your tours and everything, and make sure we get that out. And I really do appreciate you having on the show. You've been a heck of a guest and all. I hope we can have you back down the line for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that'd be great, man. I always like doing these interviews and, you know, getting to be heard a little bit by the fans and talking to you guys and stuff like that. So, again, for any of you who didn't hear, bookbiglg@gmail.com for booking inquiries. You can follow me on Twitter @RealGallows or hit me up on Facebook, even if it's just to say hello, @OfficialLukeGallows, and I will do my best to respond to each and every one of you.
Official Luke Gallows. And you see you got some tours coming up in Japan.
Yeah, I'm leaving Saturday. I'm headed to Nigeria Saturday, and then be back here in Atlanta for about 8 hours, and then straight off to Tokyo for Mr. Inoki, and then
that's gonna be rough.
It's gonna be brutal, actually, because the Nigeria thing, the flights were like 3 hours apart, so I had to change my flight, and changing my flight made me go from a direct flight from Atlanta to Tokyo to Atlanta to Phoenix, Phoenix to L.A., L.A. red-eye to Tokyo. So I'll pay for that one, but, you know, that's how it goes.
You pay a heavy price for that one. Any upcoming matches in Japan, in Georgia, I mean?
You know what? I don't have a lot of stuff going on in Georgia, so you guys hit me up. I'd love to do some local stuff and not have to sit on the airplane every single week. I'm up for anything, anywhere. Set the ring up. Let's get it going.
Well, fantastic, fantastic. Very good, very good. Well, so, you know, you don't got to go all the way to Clayton, Georgia to see Luke Gallows. If you're a local promoter, I'd like to get a hold of him and book a star from the WWE, a guy who can still go, probably can draw you some fans. BookBigLG@gmail.com. I get that right?
That's right, man.
Fantastic, fantastic. Real quick, before we do go, got any good road stories or anything for us?
Oh, man. Yeah. Let's see. We talked about this earlier, and I told you I had a whole bunch of them, but I give me something. I need a topic or something. I can't just pull them out of my hat, I don't think.
Okay. Crazy things while driving down the road.
Driving down the road.
Danger. Pick a person who involves, and so see if you got one.
Let's do a Hornswoggle.
Okay.
Okay.
I shouldn't have asked.
I have a good parting story for you about Hornswoggle that popped right into my mind.
Very nice.
Hornswoggle was rooming with me one night and was taunting me from the bathroom. I was on the bed and I'd had a few adult beverages. I think we had the next day off, so I decided I was going to drop trowel and head over and attack him, you know, ass first. So my pants are around my ankles. You have to picture now I'm hopping backwards. I have cowboy boots on and my pants are around my ankles. There's not a lot of place for me to go. And I'm hopping backwards, and I go to make the turn into the bathroom as he's freaking out. And the door jam just seemed to jump off the wall, hit me right in the face, hard weighed me, busted me wide open. So now I'm laying on the ground with a laughing Hornswoggle over top of me, pants around my ankles, and blood shooting out of my head onto the bedspread. It was awful, man. We had to get me cleaned up and super glued back together. And then we went down to hang out in the hotel bar, and I was just seeping blood all night until I finally just had to pack it in and go up and go to bed.
That was not a good day.
That was not a good day for me.
Not a good day. Ouch. Yeah. Any good stories, if I could get one more, with Serena or Punk or Mercury?
Well, Punk and I, we would just do the most oddball stuff to entertain each other, man. I remember one time a fan gave me a piece of cheese for some reason, just like a slice of American cheese. It was like,
a piece of cheese?
Just hand you a piece of cheese. I'm not going to eat it, so I made a hat out of it. We called it Cheese Hat. And I wore it on the road for months. When we'd be in the car, I'd wear this cheese hat on top of my bald head. And Punk thought it was the funniest thing. We would tuck dandelions behind my ears, and I'd wear the cheese hat, and I'd go in to pay for gas and stuff like that. And people, you know, I'm 6'7". People look at me like I got three heads. So we got a good kick out of little weird oddball stuff like that, and just the way people would look at us as we got out of the car with, like, you know, Joey with his chrome dome, and Punk the way he looked with the big beard, and, you know, looking like Jesus, and then there was me with the cheese hat on. So people, it was definitely a motley crew, so to speak.
A motley crew, of course. What a bunch of wackiness. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
I definitely wish you luck on your tours coming up. I definitely wish you great luck in getting back to one of the companies in America, hopefully. I think you could still make an impact, and I'm sure you will down the line. And I think they're morons if they don't. But, of course, certain places, I think they're morons anyway, so it really don't matter what I think. But I think it would work out good, and I wish you the best of luck for sure on that.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing the show. Appreciate that, Luke.
All right, man. We'll talk to you guys later. Thanks.
See you, bye-bye. Luke Gallows there, our guest. Even I thought that was a great interview, Danger.
It was real good. He was very informative. And it proves to you that some people in WWE are not asses. So he's one of the legit good guys and fan-friendly.
Some people in WWE are not asses. Who in WWE is an ass?
Answer that.
Don't say the word Laurinaitis. Not saying he is one. Not saying he is one.
Well, Billy Gunn was still up there.
No.
Maybe.
So, what do you think about the idea? The idea of Tough Enough. You think, would you want to do the one with Maven and company, or you want to do the one with Stone Cold now?
I think I would like to do the one right now. I think I would... See, I would last a little bit longer. I think I can go for at least, I would be at least the third one be eliminated. I think I could compete with them. And I can come up with far better matches if Stone Cold asked me, well, who's your favorite match? I could come up better matches than Melina and Alicia Fox, so.
DX versus Shred Society would be a better match than them.
That and Steve Austin, when he's talking to the people, he wants you to be in your face. He wants that trash talking. He wants, because if you're not doing it to him and to Bill DeMont, you're not taking it seriously. You don't have that heart. It's just both of them, especially Steve Austin. He says, "I'll steal something by holding your ass." It's like, "I'm here to become a superstar. I'm going to be the superstar. I'm going to push you out of my way to get to the top." And I mean, that's the attitude. You can't just, well, I'm there for the passion. I'm there for the experience. You can't. Doing that, it's not going to get you anywhere. If you got the attitude to fight your way to the top, it's going to get you to the top.
Words from legendary, multiple-time champion, multiple-year professional wrestler, Live That Come Mark Danger. Right. Anyways, so you enjoyed the Susan Show, Icon?
Yes, I did. You know what, talking about Tough Enough, maybe I need to come up. I think I want to do a concept. I want to get 10 indie guys, and we're going to have a contest. They have Tough Enough. We're going to see, are you Danger Enough?
We're not. Don't send emails. Don't call. I'm not taking your calls. I'm not answering your Facebooks. Forget it. I'm going to try to get a hold of some people on here. Again, we wish condolences to Larry's family, Larry Sweeney, and now Chip Fairplay, who's passed away. Again, even though the Icon spoke wrong, Johnny Swinger has not passed away. I'm trying to get him on the show coming up.
I do not know why his name came up. I don't know why.
You probably want to get him on the show and talk about something. So we'll invite him on the show and talk about swinging or something and everything. Anyways, well, for the Living Icon, Mark Danger, I am Dave Wills. We appreciate you spending your Tuesday night with us, or at least, well, however long you spend with us, our Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. Tune in tomorrow to hear more Ringside Rap with Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Supervivi. And while we're in it, we'll promote everybody. One good time, since we got a couple of minutes remaining. Let's we promote. We'll promote. Let's see here. We'll promote Thursday night's Peach State Pandemonium with Mike Norris, Jerry Oaks, and Bobby Simmons. Again, we appreciate all the work they do. They do a great job over there, and I really, really, really enjoy the show. Also, why not? We'll talk about phoning in with Larry Gibb and Murder One, Trent Van Dries. Surprised didn't hear from Murder Larry Trent tonight. I'm sure we'll hear from him again. Always a great show. Always plenty of news, information, news you can use, good stuff. So be sure to tune in. Don't forget, we're here with Georgia Wrestling History. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Yes, Saturday, catch slide at Forest Park High School. Come see Dave and Danger. Get some pictures, get some autographs. We'll hug your baby, kiss your babies, and all the info is at MGCWNow.com.
If you let Danger hug your baby or kiss your baby, we're going to get you checked out by somebody, probably Dr. Phil or somebody, anybody. Anyways, if you're at WWA 4 tomorrow night, I'll be there. If you're in Forest Park at the MGCW show.
Or
at People TV studio, me and Danger probably do a little commentary over there. Say hello. If you don't say hello, well, we don't know who you are. But anyways, for the Living Icon, Mark Danger, I am Dave Wills. Thanks for listening this week. It's Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, and we'll catch you next week with a special guest, and who knows who it'll be, but it's going to be great, I assure you that. Thanks again for listening to the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, and just updated, DavidDanger.com, get over there, going to be a great show. We got archives, and we got everything archived, Bruno Sammartino, Iron Cheek interviews. Tune in. DavidDangerShow.com. See you, everybody, next week. Bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.